Amen. Thank you, Tommy. I appreciate that. And it sounds like we had a volunteer song leader in the crowd this morning as well. And Tommy, you may be on the payroll now, but there's some up and comers. Some up and comers. I appreciate that. It's great to hear everybody singing together. And it was just a beautiful morning. It is always good to be together. And it'll tell you what, we have had some week. It has been, it's good to be together and to worship together, to remember who we are. Congratulations to Coffee County, the girls' team over there. Ellie, y'all did a great job. Was it Friday night? And I'm glad to see that success on the court has brought you friends. I'm glad to see that. We were concerned that you wouldn't be able to make friends, but you do good in basketball. You can make friends. It's really, really proud of you. Let me start here. Are you a morning person? I tell you what, if you are a morning person, raise your hand. You bunch of sickos. I am not normally for dividing the church. But this might be scriptural grounds. It is harder for me. I think under some circumstances I might could become a morning person. But it is hard for me to get motivated in the morning about this time of year when it's dark in the mornings. You know what I'm saying? I'm not sure how the clock changing works, but there are some times of the year when you wake up at your normal wake-up time and it's still pitch black outside. Oh, that's a terrible feeling. The state of Florida, in their legislature right now, they have the Sunshine Protection Act. Have you heard about this? It's a state law that they're trying to get through whereby they would stay on daylight savings time all year long. That's their way of trying to have as much afternoon sun as possible. There are two other states that kind of disregard daylight savings time, Alaska and Hawaii, and they do so, not Alaska and Hawaii, Arizona and Hawaii. And they just decided this is where we want to be, and we don't want to have to worry with setting your clocks back and forward and all that. And I can understand that because it throws me off. If I wake up and it's light outside, and then the next day I wake up and it's dark outside, or in the afternoons you get off from work and it's light outside versus dark outside, it just throws your whole clock off. I remember waking up, growing up, my dad, it didn't matter what time of the year it was, my dad would come in my room in the morning and sort of shake me / give me a shaken baby syndrome and say, rise and shine. And that was the way of waking me up. Rise and shine. I don't know if your parents ever did anything like that, or my father was the only sadistic one out there. But anyway, my first reaction, and this was kind of built up over the years, was to keep my eyes closed and hope for just a few minutes more sleep. If I could just get a couple of more minutes, just like as an adult now, and I don't have anybody to wake me up, it's the snooze button on my phone / clock. If I can just get 5 more minutes, that's what I have my snooze set for. And I just want to lay there as long as possible. I do find that once I get up and I get going, I get moving. If I get a bite to eat, I start to wake up, right? Maybe I drink a big glass of water. I kind of get glad I'm up and I get ready for the day. Maybe you have a routine that kind of gets you up and going in the morning. Maybe it's jumping in the shower or drinking a cup of coffee or going for a walk or something along those lines. Something that gets you up and ready and engaged and participating in the day. Well, last week, we talked about the danger that we pose to ourselves and to our families, to our loved ones, when we get too busy. And that's the way I like to think of it. When we get overly busy doing a bunch of different stuff, just involved in things that don't really matter in the long run, and we become a danger to ourselves and to those we know and love. This week, this is a follow-up to that because there is an opposite end of the spectrum from overly engaged with the world to overly disconnected from the spiritual reality of this world. In other words, we can become hyperactive in doing all these activities. We can also become hyper-passive in disengaging. It's the spiritual equivalent of hitting the snooze alarm and say somebody else will get up and get this stuff done. That's the spiritual equivalent of just checking out and expecting it to come to you instead of you going to it. So we are not going back to the book of Isaiah, except this morning we're back in the book of Isaiah. This is a series on the families, and as I was putting this lesson together, I was just reminded of this passage, and I think it is really appropriate for us this morning. We're going to be in Isaiah chapter 60, beginning at verse 1. Isaiah chapter 60, beginning at verse 1, says, "Arise and shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you." This is Isaiah talking to the nation of Israel. Remember, they are living in captivity at this point. He says, rise and shine. Even though you're in captivity, even though you're in exile, away from the land your fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers have been raised in, away from your homes and families, arise and shine, for the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples. But the Lord will arise upon you, and His glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Now, it makes it harder to rise and shine when it's dark, doesn't it? But imagine living in this town. This is Barrow, Alaska. That's where it is up there. That is the northernmost point in Alaska, the far northern tip in the state of Alaska. It's above the Arctic Circle, which is a circle. Right up in there. If you think it's dark, we have a small, scant amount of daylight during the winter here in Tennessee. I mean, just imagine what it's like in Barrow, Alaska. The sun sets in the afternoon of November 18th and doesn't rise again until January 24th. From November 18th to January 24th, there is zero sunlight. 65 days with zero sunlight. Like, we've had a week that's been cloudy and rainy, and I was like, today, oh, sunlight. Did you feel like that this morning when you walked out and you're like, blue sky, sunlight? I feel better. I don't even know what it was like to see this, right? It just feels like it's been a long time since we've had a beautiful day like this. 65 days with not only no blue skies, no skies. I mean, just nothing. So in the English language, we have this word, and it's called an epiphany. An epiphany is when something that has been long hidden is finally revealed. And when in Barrow, Alaska, the sun finally comes up on January 24th, the whole town comes out to celebrate because finally there's light again. After the long darkness, boom, sunlight. You and I read Scripture, at least I hope we do. And when we do that in earnest, when we pray fervently, when we serve others selflessly, when we worship with that sort of reckless abandon, singing at the top of our lungs, you get these moments, these epiphanies, these revelations, when you feel like God is so close you can almost touch Him. Have you ever experienced that? Like in a moment of worship or in a moment of diving into the Scriptures, it's like you can hear the voice of God. You can see God standing before you. Not literally, maybe, but it's just like God is so close and you feel like He's just right there. And that's when the light of God is shining upon us. That's what That's what Isaiah is simply saying, that God is going to be so close. His light is going to shine on you, and you're going to be like, finally, after the long darkness, after all this time we spent in exile, all this time we spent in captivity, finally the sun is shining on us. What a great day it is. What a beautiful thing it is to be that close to the light of the Lord. And when we do, when we experience those, it's just like for a few brief shining moments, you can see God more clearly. He's revealed to you, and your breath catches in your throat, and your eyes may well up a little bit, and maybe even your knees get a little weak. And like, you want to yell it out loud. You want everybody to know and say, this is, that's it. That is it. Everyone needs to get this. Everyone needs to experience this God. You know what that's like when you just get so close to God? It's just, you can't communicate that effectively. But the glory of God that Isaiah's talking about here, the light of God, it's not just shining on his people. Isaiah goes on to say that it's going to shine out of his people. There ought to be something, when we draw close to God, there ought to be something so different with us, so much brighter about us, that those who are in darkness wonder what is so wrong with us. I mean, that's why the nations, he says, are drawn to Israel, and that's why the world ought to be drawn to us as the people of God. And he says, when these nations come, when they come, they're going to come bearing gifts. Now, this is a strange verse. I'll try to explain it to you, though. It says, lift up your eyes and look about you. This is when the nations are coming to you. All assemble and come to you. Your sons come from afar, and your daughters are carried on the hip. They're talking about the children, like when they got carried off into captivity, some of the children were scattered. Like families didn't get to stay together. And it says, when these nations come to you, the children of Israel, and I think he's speaking metaphorically, I think he's referring to the northern tribe who was carried off into Assyrian captivity, but at any rate, he says, when the nations come to you, your lost children will come back. Your sons will come in, and your daughters, people will come in. The nations are going to bring your children back to you. Now, they're not coming back just to give you your children. This is not like a goodwill offering. They are coming because they are drawn to the light that is shining out of you. They are coming because of the glory of God, and your children are just brought along for the ride. The nations don't come to us to serve us. They come to worship God, but we reap benefits sort of in the crossfire of that action, of that drawing. They come because of the light. Now, this past week, our nation experienced just another horrific tragedy. And we mourned, and we got angry, and hopefully we prayed, and we wondered what had gone wrong and what we ought to do about it, and we came up with lists, and we posted about said lists on social media. And we ought to ban all guns, or at least all assault rifles. No, we need more guns in school, not less guns. No, we need armed security guards. No, we need more governmental health care. No, we've got to get God back in the public school system. No, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody's got a solution, and you probably have a pet solution. I've got a pet solution, too. But everybody's got a pet solution. Our nation, and especially our children, has gone off the rails in some way. We don't know how. We don't know why. We don't know what the solution is. All we know is that something is broke and needs to be done about it. And so we all have these pet solutions. And by the way, all of those solutions, and probably your solution too, I'm just guessing, almost exclusively think that this federal government or the state government or the local school system ought to fix our problems. Somebody else needs to fix our problems. The government needs to do it for us. Our society is broken, like somewhere deep down inside there is something broken. And it's not just in our children. The guy who set up in Las Vegas wasn't a child. He's 64 years old. Something is deeply broken in the human beings of our society, and the government needs to fix that. That seems to be the general gist of it. Like if we pass better laws, people will quit being broken. And don't say, oh, that's why we don't need to pass. The government could do things to limit access of people who are broken to weapons of mass murder. Saying, well, it won't work because bad people will still do it. Yeah, but we still pass drug laws. We don't have a problem with that. We still have immigration laws, and people still break that. So we need to get rid of immigration laws and drug laws. People still break them. I guess we don't need them. So don't put the solution and say we ought to do nothing either. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the government, the schools, it is not their job to reveal God's glory to the lost children of our nation. That is not their job. That is our job. That is your job, personally your job. And that is my job, personally my job. It is the school's job, as I understand it, we have given them the task, voluntarily, to teach our kids math and science and reading and history, etc. It is not where my kids go to school, which is the Raider Academy and Westwood Middle School. That's where my kids go. It is not Raider Academy or Westwood Middle School's job to teach my children about God. That is the job of the church. That is the job of the people of God. It is not their job to teach my child how to become a fulfilled human being. That's not the government's job. That's our job. As the church. It is not the government's or the school's job to show my kids how to deal with the bad things that happen in life. They can't do that. I mean, the government can't deal with bad things that crop up in their own system. They sure can't deal with the personal stuff that crops up in our lives. We have to show them how to do that. We are right now looking at the effects of kids growing up in a culture that has desensitized them to violence and glorified it, by the way, with our military culture and our fetishization of guns. We have glorified violence, and then we have left them feeling alienated because of our individualization. We left them feeling alienated from their family and from their friends, from their peers, and then we have given them easy access to the very weapons that are designed for mass murder, and they mistakenly believe that using them will solve them and make them feel better inside. Like somehow venting this rage will make them feel whole. Now, maybe the government can do a better job on some fronts of limiting that access or changing mental health policies, but it cannot fix broken people. It cannot fix lonely kids. And I'm going to pick on someone this morning. I don't even know if he's here. Well, good. All the better. Is Marcus here? Marcus is here. Great. He's not here. Okay. So many of you know Marcus Connor. If you don't know Marcus, you need to just go to the post office. He's on the wall there. And but he coaches a little team over here in Upward. He does a really good job in connecting with his little girls he coaches. And then he also referees. Coaching is not enough. He also referees. And this 2 weeks ago, he came to drop off his child in class back here on a Wednesday night, and he noticed that the teacher was out for the 4s and 5s. And so Marcus taught the 4 and 5-year-olds that Wednesday night. And then last week, he came to drop off his other small child in the 2s and 3s, and the regular teacher is out there. In fact, we need a teacher in there. And so Marcus Connor and Ryan Rucker taught the 2 and 3-year-olds. And two weeks ago, he was teaching the 7th and 8th graders because somebody, anyway, And this is all despite the fact that he has these two small kids of his own, and I know for a fact that he works this just brutal work schedule that allows next to no time off. So why does he do all of that stuff? It's because he wants to make a difference in the lives of those kids at that time. If I could just make a difference to this kid right here, right now. I am not trying to guilt trip anyone into doing more. Please hear that, because this is not, I'm not trying to contradict what I said last week. I'm not trying to give you two different messages. Last week I said we don't need to become overly busy, and that is certainly true. This week, I'm not advocating going back to busyness. What I'm saying is not do more. What I'm saying is do better. You don't have to do more things. Just do great things with the opportunities God has given you. Don't just volunteer to teach a class because it has to be done. Don't just volunteer to serve at Upward Games, which you have to do. Don't just do that because it has to be done. Do it because you can make a great difference in that kid's life that day, at this moment. They may just be for 5 minutes, and you can change a kid's perspective, at least for a short while, sometimes for the long run. And I believe that's how the church will affect change in our nation, in our society, and eventually the world. And I know this sounds like a incredibly overblown David and Goliath story. Like David is just so small and there's no way, and that just totally makes sense. There's no way that we, the 250, 60, however many are here this morning, people who are gathered at Forest Mill can change the 10,000 that live in Manchester. I don't know how many live in Manchester, but let's just pretend. 10,000 that live in Manchester, right? Well, how can we who are so few make a difference in those problems? How can we make any effective change? Well, let me just tell you my David and Goliath story. This is a true David and Goliath story. When I was a kid, I went to church camp, and they had a program that was like a day camp for the little kids. Like, you couldn't spend the night yet, but you could go out to do during our church's camp week, and you could spend the day. And on one of those days, it was we got to go to class every day. And my mom was the teacher for my class. Now, that never happened when I was growing up. This was the only exception the whole time I was growing up that my mom was my Sunday school teacher. But she was during this one camp session. I just remember this. And she taught the lesson of David and Goliath. This is, I told you, it's a true David and Goliath story. And what every boy who's heard that story wants to do is see if they could kill Goliath. Like, I want to throw something really hard at a giant. And so what my mom did was to get like four things of poster board and tape them end to end and drew this giant Goliath and pinned it up on a tree on the edge of the woods. And then she got one of my socks and put a tennis ball in the bottom of it. And all of us, like 5 and 6 and 7 year old kids, got to stand there and take down Goliath. Now, I don't even know if my mom remembers that story, but I remember it. And that day, like, that was the greatest experience. A tennis ball and a sock was a great experience and changed my perspective about that story. Just like this one silly thing. Now, your capabilities, your abilities, you're like, I can't, look, I'm not a great teacher. Great. You don't have to be a great teacher. I'm not asking you to be a teacher. I'm asking you to make a difference in this child or this person or this neighbor or this friend or this person who works at the grocery store or this person who works on your car. Or I'm asking you to make a difference on the person who sits next to you on the pew or the person you go home with. Make a difference for them today. Brothers and sisters, I'm not trying to guilt you into doing more. Certainly not more than you can handle. But we as the people of God, the people who reflect the glory of the living God, have to do that to a lost and dying world. We don't have to do more. What we have to do is focus our time and our attention and our energy on the things that matter. And here is the synopsis for this. The things that matter are the people. Out of all the things that matter in this world, the one thing that God says really matters is the people. It is not the government of any particular country. It is not the policies. It is not the things that we own, our possessions. It is not the quality of our nation's military or our nation's police force. The thing that is worth dying for, the thing that God sent His Son to die for, was people. And then He says, I'm going to give you some of those people. Now you die for them too. That is the kind of quality life we have been called to lead. A life of self-sacrifice. That is when the nations will see the difference in us and come streaming. And who knows, maybe they'll even bring our sons and daughters with them. Now this morning, this is not a regular kind of invitation kind of sermon, but I want you to know that wherever you are on the spectrum of your relationship with God, if you need prayers of encouragement, forgiveness, or if you're ready to begin a relationship with God, know that we want to help you and walk with you on that journey. And if we can do that in a public way this morning, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?
When we walk with